Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Good morning, good day. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Friday live on HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm Jay Cruz, and I do want to throw in the live element. Sometimes I do pre-record the show, depending on schedule, behind the scenes here at HealthyLife.net. For those that listen to the network and may or may not know, I kind of produce nearly all the shows, which is cool, being a one-man band. But every now and then, you know, if someone's going to suffer, it's going to be me. I'd rather my show has to be the sacrifice. If you will, bunt, get that runner over, maybe score that runner from third with a sack fly, whatever you got to do. Obviously, you got to be a sports fan to even get that reference. So today we're going to look into what is happening fantasy sports-wise with my two baseball teams, the Dynasty team and the Keeper League team, both the Stone Sox and Maury's Wigs, happy to say, are in the playoffs and heading into Friday's baseball action with a couple days to go, Sunday being the final day of the week. Both teams have good leads, so they both might get to the final four, which would ultimately mean I have one more win and I'm in the championship rounds, two more wins for either team, and I am the champion. So it's been a successful year, I think, to get this far, no matter what league you're in. If you can get to the final four, as they call it in college basketball, for the medal rounds, for those that just enjoyed the Olympiad from France, when they get to the last four, you got a game for the winners going to the gold and the not winners going to the bronze medal game. And then whoever doesn't get that doesn't get the bronze. Finished fourth in basketball last year, had to turn in some keepers, so it's a little early for that, but pretty much looking forward to the apex of all sports here in a couple months, about a month from now, mid-October. We're going to be in the middle of real baseball playoffs. Fantasy baseball will be over, and maybe you'll be a champion or somebody who came close. Football season will be up and running a few weeks into it. You'll definitely get a read on your team by then. Are you going to be a buyer, seller? Are you trading? Are you cutting? Are you succeeding? Are you looking for next year already? And then basketball will begin with basketball drafts coming up and prep for the NBA season. As I take a quick pause on the cough button there, which may or may not happen a couple more times today. I'd rather do that than sit out another round. So, yeah, I'm happy to say my two baseball teams are in the playoffs. Really happy that the Dynasty team, Maury's Wigs, the auction team, got in this year. We had a tough season last year due to in a lot of injuries coming out of the gate with expensive players, so there wasn't a lot of ways to move around, and they were top dogs who were expected to put up good numbers and kind of help carry and lead in their different categories. So a nice turnaround for that team, and it's always fun to have the validation that obviously more goes into it, but talent wise and the rules of this particular game, you can build a pretty good team. And I think the league is more challenging. Ultimately, I prefer auction leagues because I do think there's more of a challenge, and I find it a bit more relaxing in that in just the last couple of weeks when I did the auction league draft for football and the round the snake draft for football. Even though the snake draft is a much simpler league, that draft was over in like 15-20 minutes, it seemed, because we also had some keepers. It was a little frustrating, because one time that draft was rolling around, it was about the fourth round, and I hadn't taken a quarterback, and I was even on vacation with family, and I tell my sister, I go, one more person, I can take Patrick Mahomes. And then one more person went, and Patrick Mahomes was off the board. So, in that league, I pivoted. I think I went with Jordan Love. By that moment, I think I was pretty set on a quarterback, and kind of a bummer. Jordan Love, one of the first big injuries of the National Football League this year. So we'll get to some injury updates very soon in the show. And I was happy that I was able to get his foray back up on that team. I picked up Jaden Daniels. I was very impressed with his play of the handful of rookie quarterbacks that debuted last week in week one of the National Football League. So we'll kind of break down that stuff as well. But I did want to update you on Maurice Wiggs and the Southside Stone Sox, who both are in the playoffs for the season. The Stone Sox currently leading 7-2, heading into the weekends. And the nice thing about in the Yahoo League and some other leagues, you can look at the categories in this particular league, since it's a 5x5 or a 10 stat overall league. That's our keeper league, the Stone Sox, and this is year 6. I'm proud to say I was the champion in year 1 and haven't had a championship since then. I finished 3rd last year, I think, 3rd or 4th, and am, you know, a couple days away. If this holds true, I should be in the final 4. You know, looking at runs, I have a bit of an edge, 22-14. Home runs, I'm up a couple, 6-4. RBIs is a little slim. I have a 2-run lead there, 20-18. Stolen bases, a decent lead with 2, because not a lot of people steal a lot of bases. And a batting average, I'm down by 30 batting points. The batting averages have been statistically much lower the last couple years, if you've noticed. And wins, he and I are tied. He's got me 4-0 in saves. I'm slightly ahead in strikeouts, 30-27. Slight lead in ERA, 2.96 to 3.19. And WHIP is pretty close as well. I'm at 1.13. My opponent is at 1.26. So while on one end it looks like a commanding lead for my team, there's 3 or 4 categories that could easily turn depending if a team gets hot or not. They've taken a look at Maurice Wiggs. We're in year 2 in our auction dynasty league. Many of these players were on our teams last year. And it's almost time to start thinking about next year. In fact, I was able to make a roster move just the other day. And it was a little interesting because the person I initially picked up, I was literally told in almost immediate time, whoever our commissioner, one of our co-commissioners, if you will, saw my transaction, and I made a mistake in the player that I picked up, because apparently he is on the minor league roster of another owner, and I assumed that he had been in the league a little longer and did not think he was going to be under the subject. So I immediately got a text that the player in question is Austin Wells, the mustachioed catcher of the New York Yankees. I made a trade a few weeks ago, a trade of Will Smith for a couple of good players, including a pretty solid Yankees pitcher and a good backup catcher, giving me the Contreras brothers, Wilson and William. And it was Wilson, the one on the Cardinals, who's currently in the injured list. So I've been playing William all the way, which isn't a bad thing. He does play every day. There's not a lot of platooning going on in his position. And I just thought, you know, here in the last week, another catcher would be good for that, you know, particular time if he doesn't play in the next few days. That's the reason I went with Austin Wells. I almost picked up this guy who's on the Angels, Luis Ojape, who's a good young player and was on a minor league roster. And then I realized he's on the free agent list, meaning whoever had him has since released him, and therefore making him kind of free game at the moment. Anyway, you're probably listening going, dude, you're way too deep into this stuff. And maybe I am, but these are the things that are easy to overlook because I do have access to a list, but there's been so many changes that I probably don't have the latest and greatest, but I just assume that this player has been around a little longer and wasn't under the minor league status. Nonetheless, he was let go from my roster by the co-commissioner, and you know, no big problem. And I figured, and the reason I was making the roster move is I had a pitcher who a couple days ago was on day-to-day, and I had an opportunity to bring another player off the injured list. I had to drop a player as Yoshi Yamamoto, who'd been on the list, injured list pretty much much of the season. I think he started his first 12 games for the Dodgers. He's been on the shelf for a good 3 or 4 months. He's on the 60-day injured list. And he started the other day, and no decision, went about 4 innings. Got through it, thankfully, for him. And I had to release another player who I'd picked up kind of at the bottom of the list, a pitcher from Baltimore named Suarez, who qualified as a reliever and a starter. And he's on Baltimore. They're a pretty good team, so I figured he would maybe eke out an occasional win and kind of fill that fifth starter role, while one of my top rookies and sort of a cornerstone of the team, Gavin Stone, who'd been very impressive for the Dodgers, he'd sort of been taking over that role of, you know, the new kid in town, the new rookie. And for those that follow the Dodgers and baseball in general, they've been a heck of a team for the last 10 years. I believe they've won 10 straight National League pennants, National League West Division championships. They've, of course, had to bump their toe in the playoffs, haven't closed in the World Series. They did get a championship. It was the truncated season. Non-Dodger fans are going to put an asterisk next to that one. I'll just leave it there. It's kind of the L.A. asterisk season because the Lakers also came home with some hardware after being in the bubble down in Florida when we were all doing that thing a couple seasons ago. Anyway, I was able to pick up Walker Buehler as I, you know, took a look at the list because I had another pitcher go on the shelf. And, you know, Walker Buehler was someone who I picked up in his rookie season as a free agent. And I picked him up on the Stone Sox, my keeper league team. And then he ran into arm problems, which seems, you know, that it's extremely common in Major League Baseball based off the throwing techniques and the way the game's being played, even though baseball managers and pitching coaches are on a pretty much a, you know, understanding that they really try to keep pitch counts down. And if you want to see the irony of the pitch count, just look at the Nolan Ryan documentary. I think it's on Netflix. You know, Nolan Ryan doesn't have the best record. We have more strikeouts, more no-hitters, and, you know, pitched well until he was 40s. Lots of games where he went into the 11th and 12th inning, threw 150, 175, 200 pitches in a game. Plus, you know, he was a strikeout pitcher. Therefore, he had to throw more pitches and went deeper in counts than someone like Greg Maddux, who was famous for his years in Atlanta for getting through games with like a pitch count somewhere in the 80s, and he got a lot of ground ball outs and was able to work through innings, you know, by forcing batters to pretty much hit towards his fielders and not have to, you know, in his economic mindset, waste pitches to get strikeouts, if you will. He's being more efficient. Nolan Ryan, complete opposite. Not many people like Nolan Ryan in today's game. Paul Skeens, the rookie with Pittsburgh, who had a pretty big splash and started for the National League in the All-Star game. He might be one of those type now with that type of future. Of course, Pittsburgh being a kind of a team on the edge of competitiveness, maybe just on the underbelly of competitiveness, if you will, although with a lot of good young talent, probably figured let's, you know, bank on the future and not blow out young Skeens' arm already. In fact, the Tommy John, you know, surgery is so commonplace in baseball. I was offered a trade for Paul Skeens in my dynasty league with the Stone Sox, and I accepted it. I traded my outfielder Michael Harris Jr. And in return, I got Duran from the Red Sox, who played the same position as is Harris and has actually had a better season. He's probably going to be kept next year. And Paul Skeens, and when people were, you know, talking about him, when he was activated earlier in the year, another person was looking to trade for him and or, you know, threw in the comment going, yeah, he's got a lot of promise, but by this time next year, he'll probably need the Tommy John surgery. You know, that got a little, you know, cynical, dark humor laugh, but that's the way baseball seems. You know, good young pitchers are getting this Tommy John surgery because they're, you know, the mindset of the game is, you know, throwing power, throwing fastballs, and, you know, eventually, or not even too eventually, you know, soon in pitchers' careers, you know, it's blowing out the UCL ligament, I believe it is. I'm not going to try to say it, but I think that's the one. And it's become a common thing. Back to Walker Buehler, that happened to him, and it's happened to a lot of pitchers on the Dodgers, not just them, but many in baseball. But since I do live in Los Angeles and I follow the Dodgers games, I, you know, tend to have a bit more of a pulse on things like their day-to-day heartbeat of rotations and subs and pitchers. And they've had good pitchers. They just had a lot of an injury, but they're, you know, a team that I can sort of get the jump on other players in my league because I'm, you know, I'm the only one that's living in L.A. where I notice a lot of my opponents, they tend to have more East Coast stacked teams. I'm a bit more of a West Coast because I watch more West Coast baseball than they do, even though we all pay attention to the full league. It's not that, you know, I can't get access to it, but, you know, being able to listen to broadcasts and the, you know, the pregame and postgame show, you know, Dodger talk, you hear a lot more, you know, specifically on the little health issues, like is a pitcher going to, you know, get a rehab start in the minor leagues, or how soon is that going to happen? You know, where if you just follow the Yahoo News or ESPN, you're not going to get it as quick. So I might have a jump on, you know, things with the Dodgers and maybe to a lesser extent the Angels, although there haven't been much home to write about. Well, the Dodgers have been successful. So I picked up Walker Buehler, and while I don't see him necessarily being near where he was, because he sort of is just on his comeback from his second Tommy John surgery. He had one a couple years ago, came back, and apparently the first one didn't take, where he needed another. I think he had one before he, you know, began the career somewhere in college. Nonetheless, you know, surgery number two out for, and it's at least a year out, and then there's rehab, and of course, you know, the coddling and babysitting and massaging non-Nolan Ryan school of pitching coaches, which I'm sure is the safer way to do it. I'm just kind of trying to poke the bear at it a little bit, but I was able to pick him up, and while he may or may not contribute this week or next week, the duration of my season as the Dodgers try to get to the playoffs, A, there is a need for him on the real Dodgers pitching staff with Gavin Stone hitting the injured list, and B, I was able to pick up Walker Buehler, you know, for the grand total of one fictitious dollar, and being able to keep him next year, where he'll have an off season to continue rehab if nothing else goes wrong between now and then, no healthy setbacks for him. I should have a pretty decent pitcher at a very good price heading into next season, and the pitcher I also had picked up just recently, Alex Webb, who'd been traded to the Cleveland Guardians, who went to the disabled list or injured list just this week, necessitating the roster move in playoff time. He's somebody that I should be able to keep next year as well. I just recently picked him up from another team, you know, for a $1 free agent waiver wire pickup. So, you know, that team is Maurice Wiggs, who is a character from Goodfellas, if you've seen that movie. He was known for his gambling habits, and he wasn't so good. He's getting shaken down by Robert De Niro's character, and his wig came off, and he had a little commercial going. He's always on the phone calling his bookie. Kind of a funny character, and just, you know, again, in fantasy sports, the clever or ironic or humorous or non-official name you can give to your team is kind of the tradition. You just can't call your team the Yankees or the Cowboys or the whatever. I should drop a basketball name, but I think you got the point. Anyway, so Walker Buehler was picked up instead of Austin Wells, and nonetheless, I think he might get a decent performance, get me a couple numbers. As long as he doesn't get shelled in a upcoming performance, he should do good. He replaces Alex Webb, who, you know, should be good by next year, and two guys that, you know, I should have for maybe about a $2 price tag next year, which is still very inexpensive for the talent I'll be getting out of those particular players. And, you know, I'm looking ahead to, you know, possible players of keeping and not keeping for next year. Obviously, I've been offered a lot of trade offers for Gavin Stone. Hopefully he does okay. It was pretty much a bummer beginning of the week or very end of last week when the news that he was going on the injured list, the local guys here were, you know, kind of flabbergasted because, you know, he'd been the steady guy and had been taking over that sort of role. Clayton Kershaw, who I don't have, he's kind of the mythical Gandalf the Gray in the Dodger staff, but his injuries have been, you know, well known, and not just arm injuries. He's had back injuries. Now he's got a situation with a toe. So he had just come back, and now he's got this, you know, big toe situation. And even though he hasn't been, you know, performing so well this season because they're, you know, getting him through his injury and such, you know, they're kind of wondering who their new number one's going to be. Tony Gonsolin's another guy. I've had Tony Gonsolin on both my teams. I've had him in expensively. I've had him in, and he also had to go on the shelf, Tommy John surgery. And, you know, that's just a long time to keep somebody with the limited injury player positions we have on the rosters. You know, I tried keeping Clay Thompson when he blew out his knee back in basketball. And keeping him for a year because I thought I was head and shoulders above the rest of the league and then I could coach and get to the playoffs just, you know, off knowing what I know and, you know, filling the roster with a bunch of dudes. And I was sort of able to do that, but obviously, you know, I'm not as, you know, super spectacular Jerry West wizard mind of basketball as I thought I was, and B, it's a lot of luck, you know, and C, other owners they study and could get just as lucky or, you know, could have good knowledge and draft a very good team as well. So I sort of learned my lesson in keeping injured players, you know, from season to season due to long-term recovery season-ending injuries. It's kind of a bummer, but it's better to let them go. And in this case, with Walker Buehler being available, not exactly when I was looking for him, it seems to almost be the right time. I mean, I picked him up before he became a rookie sensation because, again, I listened to some Dodger games and he'd been about three starts into his, rookie coming out party, if you will. And people were discovering who he was and he's starting to become their number one guy until the arm went bad again. This is almost a similar situation. Coming back from injury, non-Dodger followers don't know that he's quite there yet. And he hasn't really come back and made that big, had a big good game or a big bad game. He can come back and get shelled and give up a number of runs. Case in point, Bobby Miller, another person who I had on their team, had high hopes for, so did they. And he's been getting hit pretty hard, which means either A, he's been figured out, like maybe he's tipping pitches, which, you know, that's something, it's kind of controversial, but not really when, you know, like there's that documentary, we're going to take a break here in a minute, but there's that documentary about the guy, Connor Stallion, who was the Michigan sign stealer last year for Michigan college football, that, you know, has put the program into some hot water and, you know, vacating victories or, you know, some sanctions with the NCAA, even though they won on the field. But he talks about, you know, how there's an underground of people who steal signs. And this guy literally would look at tape games. We're going to have to take a break. I'll get back to more Connor Stallion and tipping pitches, as I also saw an interesting video with Barry Bonds talking about the art of reading pitchers. So we'll come back with that in a minute, and then we're going to take a look ahead at this week's NFL. And Fantasy Sports Friday, HealthyLife.net Radio with your buddy Jay Cruz.
When my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Roku is like having your own video library with over 300,000 choices. And it's the best way to get Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and so much more. There's a Roku player for every budget, so go to HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on the Roku banner.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
We're back, Fantasy Sports Friday, HealthyLife.net Radio. I'm Jay Cruz. If you missed the first part of the show, or maybe it was a little confusing and you want to check it out again, some stuff went over your head, maybe you're new to fantasy sports in general and you don't understand terms like dynasty and snake draft and sit'em or start'em, things like that, you can always go back to the archives. And somewhere in there, I think there's a show for Fantasy Sports 101. And you can always ask me a question, J. Cruz Media. If you want to follow me on social media, you can look me up by that email or just send me an email. Those things still work, too. So we need to get to the social media and holograms and all these good things like that. So anyway, I was talking about this documentary from it's a documentary series on Netflix that I was going to go ahead and promote and have now forgot. But it's like Inside Story or True Story or The Hidden Story, stuff, and it's had a number of specials over the time that have focused on sports and other things, or they've included, they've had specials including, the one that was on Manti Te'o, who, if you do or don't remember, was a player who was quote-unquote catfished by a person pretending to be a female that ended up having an online relationship that Manti Te'o thought was, a lot further. Anyway, they broke down that whole story in this series. It's got a few of them, and some have, worked on shown sports and some sports scandals. I think there might be one with Johnny Manziel. We have an old answering machine here at the Healthy Life Radio Studio, and I just got to say the answering machine is the most antiquated, useless piece of technological equipment out there. I think the 8-track cassette player has more value and relevance than the answering machine, especially at a business where we get a lot of telemarketing and sales calls. So I was just a bit distracted by the continuing resetting of said antiquated machine. But anyway, Connor Stallions talks about the sign-stealing allegations that he was put under, and he comes across as a pretty decent, nice guy, and the whole sign stealing thing, it's just there's another writer from Yahoo Sports on there called Dan Wetzel, I think his name is, you may have heard of him if you follow sports, was talking about how it's kind of an open secret, or not even such a secret, and a subculture that there are fans, with college football there can be more people more fanatical or just as fanatical as there are with the NFL. Number one, people actually attend colleges like Michigan and Ohio State. Therefore, they might feel that rivalry where, me in California, having no real attachment, I grew up thinking Bo Schembechler was a nicer guy than Woody Hayes. And therefore, I'm on the Wolverines when it comes to the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. However, if Ohio State beats Michigan, my heart doesn't skip a beat, my life doesn't change. And, life goes on. So, you know, this person, Connor Stallion, grew up, you know, loving the Michigan football as a kid. Ended up going to the Army Academy, very smart guy, and he just sort of dedicated himself to how to crack codes, which is something they teach with the Army, but, you know, he took it to a level with sports and was, you know, he even took it to the level where he, you know, went to games on the road ahead of time after he had figured out pretty much how to crack codes, and he was pretty good at it as far as going. He'd put a hand up on the sidelines. This is a pass. No hand up. This is a run. You know, similar to the Astros banging the trash can when they figured out this is a curve. This is not a, you know, this is a fastball. Just whatever to tip off people on the field, your teammates. If you're sitting there playing defense and you see a bunch of movement and then someone goes, it's going to be a pass, you know, that's half the guessing game. You play a little looser, and if it's going to be a run, you're like, okay, we'll come up and jam the line a little bit. You know how to play it before. Instead of having that split second or all the motion and whatnot is going to basically there to try to distract you from, you know, what's coming. And I saw a video, a sports writer was talking about how one time back in his heyday, Barry Bonds, the villainized outfielder and technically home run leader of Major League Baseball, you know, was talking to a teammate. This teammate was talking about a pitcher who was, you know, pitching that day, opposing pitcher, and saying, I just can't figure this guy out. Bonds is like, what are you talking about? And he goes, this pitcher, I just have a horrible career against him. I'm like, you know, 1-for-33 against this guy or something. And Bonds is like, no, just wait. You know, sit here for a second. He's like, let me help you. And, you know, the pitcher goes to, he goes, watch his glove. If he holds his glove one way, it's going to be a slider. If he holds it another way, it's going to be a curveball. And, like, he called 20 pitches in a row for the next, like, couple innings, you know, completely correctly just by that. And it really, you know, opened this other player's eyes to it. But it's just if you study a little more while other players don't and you follow these little things. It's kind of like if you're a poker player. There's only 52 cards in the deck, you know, unless you got a crooked dealer who knows how to, you know, move cards around and sleight of hand type stuff. And there are people out there that do that, whether we think there are or not. You know, you spend 12 hours a day, you know, the 10,000 hours, the Malcolm Gladwell, who kind of coined that concept of, you know, putting in the 10,000 hours and becoming a guru or an expert or someone really good at something because you've practiced, you know, shuffling cards and stuff like that. Other than that, most of the time it's kind of random. But you look at a certain person and maybe they get a good hand and they're excited and they do a certain thing before they make a bet. It's called a tell in poker. And the professionals, they'll sit there and they'll watch you more than they'll know. You know, they'll sort of know how the betting's going on because that's part of their what they already know. And if you're a baseball player, you know, you're kind of attuned to many, you know, things within the pace of the game. But if you're watching, you're going, okay, he's doing that. Okay, that happened. He's doing that. Oh, that's different. Okay, something different. Those are different results. And now, you know, and you just start building your thing. Where a lot of other players or, you know, at poker or baseball or football don't do that. So those are a couple interesting little insights on sign stealing and pitch tipping. I kind of wondered about pitch tipping because I don't see the nuance. If you're watching on TV, generally the most camera shots on a baseball game are from the center field perspective, if you will, where you see the back of the pitcher, and you don't see so much stuff on the front. You know, you might detect something in a windup. They, you know, other pitchers, their release point might be the tell. If it's a high, it's going to be a certain thing. If it's arm release points drop down a little bit different, it might be a certain point, certain thing. So, but anyway, if you're halfway interested in this, the special, it's called Sign Stealing with Connor Stallion, is on Netflix and very educational. I highly suggest it. It's a pretty good sports movie talking about inside sports without so much sports for you. I'm Jay Cruz. Time for a break. Fantasy Sports Friday on HealthyLife.net.
Over here.
Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
I love this song! I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold off. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
All right, let's continue Fantasy Sports Friday on HealthyLife.net. I'm Jay Cruz. Quick reminder, though, if you've missed part of the show and you are a listener of HealthyLife.net, you know about our podcast on-demand link. It's on the same homepage that you actually clicked on to hear this show. So if you are listening, you know how to go there. And you can find the Fantasy Sports Friday page or portal. That seems to be a big buzzword. And click on today's date. Check out today's show. You can download it and share it with a friend if inspired to do so as well. So we're talking about some injuries in fantasy sports and a cool documentary on sign stealing, which apparently is way more common than we think. So let's not, you know, pick on that guy, Connor, just doing something that many other people do. He took it to the extreme, though, where he was kind of taking it on the road. And looking ahead with week number 2 in the NFL and fantasy, let's take a look at some of the injuries. Big injury happened last night, and that's the segue. Tua Tagovailoa, concussion, is likely to miss time. Ironically, he ran into the player for the Buffalo Bills. It was technically... his living status was questionable. We're talking about Damar Hamlin, who was hit so directly in the chest that he suffered a cardiac arrest on the field. Some people think that was, you know, a bit of vaccine-related injury, but the NFL, of course, you know, swept that under the rug. Anyway, it's ironic, too, that Tagovailoa ran into him, Damar Hamlin, and Tagovailoa is the one with the concussion. And he's had a pretty lengthy career, young career, of concussions in the NFL. This is at least his fourth documented, maybe fifth, because one was, you know, the Dolphins in the NFL tried to call, you know, tried to get around it and called it a back injury when it was clear he was having concussion symptoms. And then the next game he got dinged again. And if you follow concussions, the... when you get a concussion, your chances of getting another one increases, and each time the bell is rung, it brings a little deeper long term. So, you know, while the NFL basically, you know, for a minute was talking about CTE, which is the abbreviation for concussion side effects and brain damage, basically, let's just bottom line it. You know, they're trying to pretend it's not really there. And let's, you know, not trying to say you should, you know, go cry a river for the players. They have grown up playing football. Their parents signed the permission slip, right or wrong, in your opinion. And, you know, this is why we sit there and go, why do they make so much money? Because, you know, they're selling their life short for the glory and the money. And this is part of the side effect. So Tua, while he's only 26, this may be his at least fourth or fifth probable concussion since his NFL career began 4 or 5 years ago, not that long. And, you know, since he's probably been playing football since he was about 7, it's probably his at least, you know, 25th concussion. How many did we all get growing up? I know I had a few. I didn't know they were concussions, but I remember falling and being dizzy. That was, you know, all kinds of stuff. In fact, quick side note, sidebar, not to get the international football people panties in a bunch, but soccer, as we call it here in the United States, we should call football soccer, but let's triple sidebar. You know, you're not allowed to use your hands or arms, so, you know, you got the torso, but you got to be careful of. You can't hit the shoulder, because that could even be a considered a arm or handball. So the head is used quite a bit, and I tell you, just playing around, my limited experience playing some soccer, you know, a ball gets kicked a good amount of distance in the air, and you think, okay, it's coming, I can knock it with my head. You know, first of all, you got to be careful it doesn't hit you right in the face. And then if you're skilled enough to actually, you know, create a move, like when those guys knock it into the goal, it's just spectacular. And so they, you know, do a practice all those hours. But that thing is like getting hit in the head by a boxer. You got a ball flying 30 yards through the air, land square on your, even if you make a good connection, that thing will ding you. So they certainly don't mention that in, you know, the quote-unquote safe or soft football. Anyway, Tua, prayers out to him. He's really kind of got decisions to make. Is he going to continue playing football? Or does he want to live his life? Because this is like, he's had a number of these concussions. And it's not going to go away. It's not going to get any better. What a warrior, though, doing what he's doing. But, you know, got to make a decision on your quality of life. You're only 26. This is just out of your hands, kind of. Steve Young was another guy, top of his game, got a number of concussions in a row. Career was done. It was done. Anyway, here's some of the players that are probable or maybe doubtful for the upcoming week injury report. If they're on your fantasy team, please take notes. Christian McCaffrey, he was not in the game Monday night. Apparently the backup knew on Friday night, as he said on the press conference. That's putting Coach Kyle Shanahan on hot water, and that's a sidebar for later. But he logged in a partial practice on Thursday, keeping McCaffrey, CMC, at least questionable for Week 2's game against the Vikings. And at least it's an early window game, so you'll be able to make an informed decision watching the early morning shows. If you have CMC on your team, hopefully you were able to grab and handcuff him, as it's called in fantasy sports parlance, especially in football, handcuff Jordan Mason to CMC. Mason played great Monday night. He's going to get the lion's share of the carries. Debo Samuel will get a handful. If you already have him, that's a bonus. If you don't have him, you can trade for him, but probably won't pick him up. He's a pretty high-level player. And, of course, the NFL is, you know, very, you know, stickler about the injury report rules, and apparently Jordan Mason in the postgame sort of let it out of the bag that he knew as early as Friday he might be playing. But nonetheless, too much time spent on the CMC injury. He's questionable, or well, questionable is usually good. That means they're probably going to play. T. Higgins, receiver of the Bengals, has a hamstring issue. He still hasn't returned to practice, so you'll need other options coming up this week. Andre Isovas, or Eosivas, I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's spelled weird. He did little in Week 1. They ran into a Patriots team that was fired up and threw down some good defense. They play the Bengals this week. The Chiefs will host the Bengals, and that's T. Higgins' team. Will Andre pick up some yardage? Who knows? The Chiefs are a little extra rested. They had the opening game and an extra 3 days to prepare and get an early vacation, and I'm sure they want to beat the Bengals, a team that talks a lot of smack and has had success with the Chiefs. The Bengals start slow, though. We'll see what happens. I definitely like Kansas City's chances in that game, especially with a few extra days rest, and the Bengals with also Ja'Marr Chase not quite in game shape. That's what happens when you hold out. LSU wide receiver rookie Malik Nabers of the New York Giants has a knee situation, did have limited practice Thursday. Adam Schefter, who's on top of everything, reports that Nabers is good to go for week two. The Giants will take on the Washington Commanders. Their defense was worse than the league last year, and they gave up a lot of action to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the opener. So Malik Nabers might have a nice game. But remember, Daniel Jones is still the quarterback of the Giants. In fact, I like Washington's chances in this game coming up this weekend. I thought Jaden Daniels looked very good and in command for Washington. The Washington coach, Dan Snyder, however, is like, I'd like to see him throw a little more than run. I think he ran like 15 times, and he also got two touchdowns and looked very good. Dalton Schultz of the Dallas Cowboys has an ankle situation, didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, putting his status in doubt for this weekend. Given that the Texans play Sunday night, excuse me, he's on the Texans, not the Cowboys. Got my Lone Star State teams confused there. I probably want to pick up your second tight end if Dalton Schultz is your guy. The backup on the Texans is Nico Collins. He didn't practice either. He has an illness. Not sure what that is. Hollywood Brown. His shoulder has been dinged up. He is now being placed on the injured reserve and will be undergoing surgery. So if he's on your team, you might going to need to make a move. If Rashee Rice or rookie Xavier Worthy is available, they would be good people. They're both on the Chiefs to pick up. Xavier Worthy scored twice on Monday night. He's got speed to burn. He's kind of like a new Tyreek Hill in that offense. Very fast out of the University of Texas. He's a Longhorn. And Rashee Rice has played pretty solid last year. The thing about him, fantasy owners may or may not have taken him in the draft. He had some off-season issues. However, the way law enforcement and the judicial system works or doesn't work, you know, they won't deal with that till after the season. That's an illegal look into any sanctions they may or may not take against him. So in the meantime, bad person gets to continue working on the big stage. And he's available for your team. Raheem Mostert, running back of the Dolphins, did not play Thursday. That was kind of why originally I liked Miami playing at home against Buffalo. But then I remember Buffalo had a pretty dominant run against the Dolphins. They've won 12 out of 13. And Miami just didn't impress me against Jacksonville. And I sort of, heading into this year, not that I thought something was going to happen to Tua, but I just thought something with Miami's offense was going to snap. And injuries was what I was thinking. Heading into last night's game, their two best running backs were questionable. Achane got a lot of carries, but Mostert didn't play, and he's week to week and not going on IR. If you watch the Rams on Sunday night playing the Lions, you're probably wondering, how come that Puka Nacua is not out there? Well, he's been dealing with, I believe, a thigh injury since camp. If you drafted him, I'm sorry. If you signed him for a lot of money like my auction league did, and he was a guy I didn't bid on because, you know, again, Los Angeles and my local team, I hear more about the Rams than other teams, at least when it comes to the nuances on things like players' health, you know, like with the Dodgers, Lakers, Clippers, Angels, Chargers to a lesser extent. So, anyway, Nacua is going to go in the IR and might be back there around week six. So, if he's on your team, think of that accordingly. I would try to trade him, maybe. You know, and say, hey, he's coming back week six. By the time, if you can trade a high-level player that's injured and get somebody, you know, decent in return, it's not the worst time to think about that. So with week two, starting or sitting, give the green light. This is all taken from Yahoo Sports. Jared Goff, if he's a quarterback on your team, he's playing the Buccaneers. And, you know, they made Jaden Daniels look pretty good in his debut as a pro. Jared Goff should also do fairly well. They're hosting, so they're playing in the indoor-friendly confines of the Ford Field, Silverdome, Detroit's home. Dan Campbell, biting knees for the hometown crowd. Jared Goff is a go against Tampa Bay for the weekend. Speaking of the Chargers, J.K. Dobbins and the Chargers are going to Carolina. They're probably loading up a plane, and they're in midair right now. And they can actually hear the replay of this show tonight at midnight or tomorrow at 9 a.m. Jim Harbaugh having, you know, full 2% milk and pancakes on the training table. J.K. Dobbins was a pickup from the Ravens for the Chargers. And another move, that's why Austin Eckler is now with the Washington Commanders. But Dobbins was an after-contact star in Week 1. Carolina's defense didn't put up much resistance in the week against New Orleans. Dobbins did pretty decent against the Raiders last week as the Chargers opened up with a 22-10 win. Rhamondre Stevenson had a nice game against Tampa Bay. I should have started him. He's somebody on my team. They will take on the Seahawks at home for the Patriots, and the underrated New England defense can keep the game manageable, and Powerbacks ran over the Seahawks for most of 2023. They do have a new defensive coordinator. Anyway, the Patriots could be a little surprising. I know last week I went into total wins for the season, and some of them were predicted. I didn't pick the Patriots to beat the Bengals. I didn't have that on my upset card. And, you know, thankfully I didn't think the Bengals were such a lock that I laid the 9.5. That's a ton of points, especially on opening weekend. But New England's defense was good last year, even when that team wasn't so good, and of course had no contribution from the quarterback, which meant the offense was pretty inept. And Rhamondre Stevenson was one of the very few bright spots and somewhat consistent spots for New England in the post-Brady and now post-Belichick era. But he had a good game last week, and the Patriots won. And their total's like minuscule. It's like 4.5 for projected win totals. It's since gone up to 5.5, and I'm tempted to take that quite a bit because I don't think they're going to be in the playoffs. I think they still have a lot of questions, but I think they can win 4 or 5 games. They already have one. And, you know, they could shock the Seahawks. Seahawks are a new team. They didn't exactly put the Broncos away. I mean, they pulled away later. But New England at home, that home crowd, looking for some positivity. Home opener, new era, Gerard Mayo. He's a defensive player and has been coaching with that defense for a long time. So that's going to be a bright spot for New England. And then power football, Rhamondre Stevenson, as long as he stays healthy, he's a guy who can, you know, produce those numbers. Moving on, Kyren Williams of the Rams. The Rams will take on the Arizona Cardinals. Williams is kind of a rare bell cow. He took on the big load last year for the Rams, but as the Rams are dealing with a bit of an injury-riddled offensive line, Williams will still need to be started in most leagues. They're playing against the Arizona Cardinals. You know, if you have Williams, Kyren Williams, who was an outstanding player last year for the Rams, you might want to handcuff him if he's available. Blake Corum, rookie out of Michigan with the Rams. He didn't get any play last week, but he's going to get some this year if the nature of running backs says he will. DJ Moore and the Bears will visit the Houston Texans. That's your Sunday night game. The Bears will have an opportunity to throw more than they did in last week's game, where the Titans played them fairly tough. However, the wide receiver room players for the Bears were injured. Keenan Allen, he's a former Charger. I could have told you that was going to happen. He had a heel injury. Rookie Rome Odunze had a knee injury and might miss some time. And Caleb Williams, while extremely talented, is still a rookie and a work in progress. The Bears' super special teams on defense, which seems to be one of those teams that always scores points. You know, the Bears are a great defense to grab in fantasy sports because, you know, while their point total might not be the highest, they seem to score a lot with defense. They get in special teams. They block kicks. They get touchdowns. They return a lot of interceptions for touchdowns. If their offense was half as consistently good, they'd be a playoff team every year. The Falcons are probably questioning their decision on the Kirk Cousins signing. He was a little bit pedestrian. And with that being said, that downgrades the rest of the wide receivers. Drake London, going into his, I think, third year now out of USC, He and the Falcons visit the Eagles. Now, the Eagles have a day or two extra rest, but they're also coming off a big travel. They were halfway. They're in another hemisphere a week ago where they played the Packers on Friday night. Now, Drake London, he ran a route on every passing play last week for Atlanta, but the passing game struggled. Kirk Cousins still shaking off rust and questionable on his health. He had an ACL injury last year, and if you're comparing him to Aaron Rodgers, Aaron's much further ahead. Jerome Ford is kind of your default offensive bell cow for the Browns. The Cleveland will take on Jacksonville. There's a lot of controversy again with Deshaun Watson. Seems that there's a recurring issue from what kept him off the field a couple seasons ago. Mentally, he's not there, so teams can now focus on trying to shut down the Browns' very strong rushing attack. That kind of puts a ding on Jerome Ford. He's playing because Nick Chubb is still returning from last year's big-ass knee injury that put him out for the season. George Pickens, a wide receiver, he's going to be guarded by Patrick Surtain II. Might not get such a... If you have another option, you might want to take that over George Pickens. Also, Justin Fields apparently will be throwing and starting quarterback, and Russell Wilson will not be, which is kind of a drag for the fact that Russell Wilson playing against the Broncos, you know, old team, old player against each other is always kind of fun. Zamir White and the Raiders playing Baltimore. The Ravens are a little rested. They didn't look that bad against Kansas City, even though they lost. They're favored by 10 points at home. Last year, the Ravens just destroyed teams at home. And Las Vegas, while they are improved, I don't know if their running game is going to be able to knock the Ravens back. So Zamir White might be a sit-em situation. Justin Herbert is kind of on the edge. If you have somebody else, you might sit him. The Chargers are going to be more of a running team this year. And, you know, they're not such an exciting offensive prospect. And then Green Bay, they traded for Malik Willis, who was on the Texans bench. He had been beat up by Will Levis, and therefore he's now a Packer. And I thought that was just kind of a cute backup trade because, you know, Jordan Love is the guy, but he escaped going on the injured list, but will be out for 3 to 6 weeks due to the knee injury that happened at the end of the Packers-Eagles game, which was in Brazil. And I want to apologize about that game. I was reading for months how the color green was not going to be allowed in the stadium, and I thought they're going to have some weird throwback and checkerboard and stripes and look like, you know, the Three Stooges playing against the Three Stooges out there. Well, that's debatable, but they were in the normal uniforms, the Packers in a green shirt and the Eagles in their white and green. Apparently the NFL somehow kept gangsters in Brazil out of the stadium. And on that note, that happy note, let's wrap up Fantasy Sports Friday. I'm Jay Cruz. We're back next Friday. We're here every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. HealthyLife.net Radio.